Thank you, Henry. My title's a bit wordy, so I won't go ahead and read it out loud. But what we're really looking at here is trying to identify the when, where, and why preferential flow occurs in a forested landscape. So before we start, I should give the definition that I'm working off of preferential flow, which is rapid flux of soil moisture that bypasses part of the soil matrix. And I think the key here is the bypass, as you'll see in a minute. I don't think I need to go into why preferential flow is important. We've had plenty of talks on that so far. So I'll give you my operational definition of preferential flow. And that is out-of-sequence soil moisture response with respect to depth. I'll be showing you a lot of data from soil moisture probes that are lined in vertical transects. And I'm calling preferential flow when a lower or a deep soil moisture probe shows a response to precipitation before a shallower one. So if a 30-centimeter probe responds before a 10-centimeter probe, voila, preferential flow. Looking at the literature, it seems like we've got a poor understanding of the basic questions regarding preferential flow. It feels like we have a poor understanding of where it occurs, how frequently it occurs, and what the controls on it are. So I'm hoping to somewhat add to this with this research. We're working in the Shale Hills Critical Zone Observatory, which is in central Pennsylvania, part of the Critical Zone Observatory Network. This figure here is of upslope contributing area, so we've got a stream channel here with some topographic swales. We've got six sites in the catchment running from the ridge top. There's one on the hill slope, a number in the swales, and one here in the valley bottom. I'll point out that this site here, number 55, is on the side of the swale, so while it looks like it's deep in the swale, we treat it more like a hill slope site. At these six sites, we've, in a number of the areas where we've got probes installed, we've got two vertical or three vertical transects of probes. So we've actually got 10 sites. I'm not treating them as replications because of the heterogeneity we see out here. So I'm treating them as different transects altogether. So at site 74, we just have one transect. At site 60, we've got two. 55, one. 53, we've got three transects. One is on the left side of a soil pit and actually has a different soil type, was classified as a different soil type than the others, and so on. This figure shows the soil profiles. You can see the little legend down below. And each one of these lines is a spot where we've got a soil probe. So we've got between 5 in most of them and 10 here at 51 right, soil probes at each of these sites. The profiles run from 37 centimeters up here at site 74 to well over a meter and a half down here in the swale bottom. I've got the probes aligned here from going from increasing soil depth, as you can see, increasing upslope contributing area, and the topographic position isn't quite correlated with this, but. And I'll further group them. So these first three sites I'm calling ridge and hill slope sites. They've got similar soil depth, that sort of thing. Excuse me. The next four sites I'm calling mid-slope sites or mid-swale sites. And then the bottom three are swale and valley sites. And I'll show you why we grouped them in a bit. So here's an example of what I'm looking for when I'm looking for this preferential flow. So this is a soil moisture figure. So here's volumetric water content versus date. This is a storm in 2009. Here's the precipitation up top. And we've got five probes. This is the ridge top site. And if it's hard to tell with this figure with the zoom, but this horizon actually responds first. So precipitation starts within about 20 minutes. We get a peak in soil moisture at 37 centimeters. About 10, 20 minutes later, I should mention that we're taking data every 10 minutes. So it's more like 20 or 30 minutes later, we get a response at 5 centimeters, then 10, then 17 centimeters, and then at 8 centimeters. So it's a complex sequence of response here. So this is a site, this is a storm where I would classify this as preferential flow. Same storm, different site. This is 51. This is further down in the swale. We see the upper probe, this is the 8-centimeter probe, responds first, then the 18-centimeter, and then we don't get any response at 40 or 114 centimeters. Okay? If we now look at site 53, we don't see any response anywhere. So one storm, three totally different responses. We get no response, we get a sequential response, and we get a preferential flow response. Okay? So what I did was I took, here's 1 year's worth of data. I should mention that we've been monitoring for 3 to 4 years. I'm going to look at 2007, 2008, and 2009. You can see that there's quite a few storms. We average something like 60 or 70 storms a year. Each one, I looked at each site, and I classified each storm as being preferential, sequential, or no flow. I removed a couple times a year when, say, probes, when we had power malfunctions and we didn't get any data, or here when the soil would freeze and we would get unreliable results. So if the temperature was below zero, I just threw it out. So we ended up with, I believe, 175 storms total over 3 years. So the first questions that I asked were, when, where, and how often does preferential flow occur? And what we get is something like this. So here's three figures. This is the number of preferential flow storms. This is the number of storms that I classified as sequential. And then these are the number of storms where we don't get any response at all. Here again, we've got the sites, and they're organized from high upslope contributing area, valley bottom, up to low upslope contributing area. So these are the hill slope and ridge sites. And the pattern I see here is no pattern at all, really. You might have expected a lot of preferential flow in the valley bottom and not much in the ridge top, or vice versa. And I don't see much pattern at all. We get a range of between about 17%, I believe site 55, 17% of the storms we classified as preferential flow, up to over 50% in sites 74, 53R, 51R. Okay? So the message I get looking at this is preferential flow seems to be occurring throughout our landscape, and it appears to be occurring quite a lot. It seems like a lot to me. So then the more interesting question is, well, what's controlling this preferential flow? When is this, why is this happening? So what I did to look at this is I tried to come up with all the possible controls or reasons why we might get preferential flow, and then come up with some index based on precipitation record or soil moisture data to describe this. So antecedent precipitation might be a reason we'd have preferential flow. If there was really a lot of rainfall before the event, or not a lot of rainfall before the event. So a couple indices describing antecedent precipitation are the antecedent precipitation index, which is just a sum of precip over between 1 and 7 days, 14 days, or the current precipitation index, which is a more of a continuous measure of antecedent precipitation. Antecedent soil moisture, which you would think would be related to antecedent precipitation, but I looked at soil moisture before the storm at each horizon. I looked at depth weighted average, or just the average of soil moisture values. Timing of storm initiation, so day of year. I looked at air temperature, which I used as kind of a proxy of ET demand. So when it's hot, you'd think there'd be a lot of evaporation. And then time since last event. And then I looked at a lot of internal storm dynamics. So the storm duration, the total precipitation, the average precipitation rate, the maximum intensity. And then I looked at things like the time from the beginning of the storm to the time of maximum intensity. You know, I was wondering whether if it was a long time of pre-wetting and then a peak in precipitation intensity, maybe that would initiate preferential flow. And then other things like the average rate until the max intensity. And then I calculated storm-specific current precipitation indices just too complicated to talk about right now. And then looked at some statistical things like the variance and the skew of the precipitation index distributions, sorry, the precipitation distributions during the event, stuff like that. So the next question is, how did I check if these controls were leading to preferential flow? So what I did was I took the all the events at each site, and I grouped them into storms that caused preferential flow and storms that did not. And then I compared each index. So here we've got total precipitation and kind of the range of total precipitation values for these storms that resulted in sequential flow or preferential flow. And if they were significantly different, I'd say, okay, that's a potential control on preferential flow. And I looked at a 95% confidence interval. So this first example, this is Site 61. This is in the valley bottom. The storms that resulted in preferential flow appear to have a higher total precipitation amount than storms that did not. Okay? So high precipitation events resulted in preferential flow at this site. I've got a lot of these, so I'll kind of move through them. At Site 51, I saw a similar thing where a high precipitation amount leads to preferential flow. Sorry, that was 51 left, 51 right, okay, which is a whole meter away. I didn't see the same pattern. I didn't see that the preferential flow storms were significantly larger than the sequential ones. I mean, it's close. The p-value is 0.05, but I would say this is not significantly. And if we go through the rest, sometimes the total storm amount is significant, sometimes it's not. Here at Site 53 it is again. So the end of doing all that, we get a little matrix like this where we've got total precipitation, and I've grayed out the sites that total precipitation is a significant control on preferential flow. Okay? So again we've got this organized, so valley bottom sites on the left, hill slope and ridge sites on the right. Okay? Before I show you the next figure, I know there's a rule that you shouldn't have more than 400 cells in a matrix that you present in a talk, but I'll give it to you anyway. So this isn't quite as awful as it looks because we can organize it a bit. I've got them in the different categories I had shown earlier. So storm characteristics are kind of in this block in the top. Antecedent precipitation indices are in this chunk here. Storm timing here, and soil moisture here, okay? And we've also still got it organized by topographic position, so the valley on the left, ridge and hill slope on the right. Wow, that's nice. Okay, so since I was dealing with a 95% confidence interval, there's kind of a 5% chance that I'll say something significant when it's really not, right? So what I'm going to look here is not at each individual one and obsess over each individual one, but I'm looking for patterns here. So if we look at, say, timing and at the ridge hill slope, it looks like these two indices, the air temperature and the day of year, seem to be significant. And in this case, it's when it's hotter and when the day of year is later. Okay, so from this I would say, okay, at the ridge and hill slope, it looks like preferential flow is occurring more often when it's hot and the day of year is later, which would be late summer, early fall. Okay, soil moisture certainly seems to be a significant index, and in this case, it's when the soil is drier. Okay, so preferential flow at the ridge up is happening when it's drier. If we look at the mid-slope or the mid-swale sites, these seem to be significant for most of the sites, and that's the skew and kurtosis of the precipitation distribution, or precipitation intensity, excuse me. The time to maximum storm CPI is significant. The air temperature is significant. In this case, it's colder, so it's happening more often when the air temperature is lower. If we look at the valley, the upper horizon soil moisture seems to be significant. In this case, it's when the soil is wetter. The maximum storm CPI seems to be higher for these events. The precipitation amount to maximum intensity and the average precipitation rate from the start of the storm to the max intensity were both higher for storms that resulted in preferential flow at these sites. And the total precipitation seemed to be higher. Okay? So we can take all this and we can make a much more easy to look at matrix where we've got our different types of indices, our different topographic positions, and the things that seem significant. And I thought this was really interesting. The antecedent precipitation index never seemed to matter, right? So storms that result in preferential flow, it didn't seem to matter what the antecedent precipitation was. The soil moisture did seem to matter, and you would think that it would be highly correlated, but for whatever reason, they don't show up in this. So at the ridge and hill slope sites, they tend to be dry antecedent soil moisture leads to preferential flow, and at the lower valley in the swale, it seems wetter. Timing, we're seeing more late summer, early fall. Here, we're seeing winter, spring. Valley, it didn't seem to be a significant thing. Storm characteristics didn't seem to be applicable. Hardly any of them were for the ridge and hill slope sites. So it's not the internal precipitation dynamics that are resulting in preferential flow for these sites. It's more when they occur. And at the mid-swale sites, they seem to be events with low uniform intensity and a late peak in storm CPI. So what we're seeing is a kind of a low precipitation rate and then a peak in it's kind of building up and then a peak in intensity. At the lower valley swale sites, it's a long moderate intensity events with a late peak in precipitation. 1 minute? Okay, this part was really interesting, but I can't talk to you about it, so we'll just skip through it. Long story short, it doesn't take me, so here we've got a plot of the number of storms, so this is the number of storms analyzed versus the percent of storms that are considered preferential. It doesn't take many storms to determine the absolute frequency of preferential flow at these sites, but if you look at the controls, it does take a lot more. So, in summary, what we've discussed, that's it.